I followed her path to the peak, and there, stranded, the sun collapsed on me. The weight on my shoulders that I had run away from on Friday morning made its way down to my feet in the form of concrete. I crumbled, and in that stasis, the sun caught up. I saw it crash into the valley in front of me, and into the five birds that flew across my pink-red sky, the sound of two kids fighting, not decipherable about what, and the dog barking at their fight are all that reach my ears while the valley burns up. The cord dropped, and the desert swallowed me whole.
This is The Eye of the Ness, where we talk about great writing published in The Ness. I'm Teo, I am the host, and today I'm here with
Frankie.
Frankie is a junior editor on The Ness, and he just published a piece called Chim Kid that we're going to talk about today. So Frankie, one of my first questions is obviously, where did this start? Where did you get the idea from? What in your life inspired this piece?
Yeah, totally. Well, I would say, first off, if you do want to read it, it is in print in select locations. And if you are not in said select locations, it's online. And you can check out my writing and all of the other great writing that was put out this week. But I don't know, I love the story personally, or love hate, but what spawned it was that I was away from home this summer, which I think you can kind of see from how much I use the word home in it. And I was lost, kind of. I was a little bit sad, and I was away from everyone that I knew, and just a little bit peeved at everything. And I was living in a really dingy apartment, and I woke up one night, and when I turned on my light, I realized it had literally fallen out of the ceiling, and it was dangling from its cord, like, right over where I slept, and had been just dangling there the entire time I was sleeping. And it just, it broke me, and I like, flew into a rage, almost, where I was just looking for ways to get out, and I bought last-minute, like, back row seats on a like 30-minute flight. It was short, but it was to the desert of the place I was living
in. Why the desert?
I don't know. Maybe because I've never really been to the desert.
Okay.
And it looked gorgeous. It looked beautiful. I've been wanting to go.
I think I definitely can see that now, because Chim Kid goes to Mars. And I feel like, I just want to ask you, why Mars? What about the desert? I know Mars is, like, literally a desert planet, is the red desert. But, like, out of all, like, why not just say a desert?
I mean, part of it was that while I was there the entire time, I was saying, like, oh my god, this place looks like Mars. And so that made the image come up in my mind when I was trying to come up with ideas for this.
Wait, which desert? Is it the Atacama Desert?
No, it's it's to the east of the Atacama. It's Salta Desert. I was living in Argentina. And yeah, and it's gorgeous, and it's a beautiful place, but it was just, like, to me, it was so barren. And a lot of the time I wasn't near towns. I was just kind of out there on red sand.
Oh wait, the sand is red. And yeah, you brought up the theme of home. I think that's what really struck me about the piece too. And I generally look for this theme in writing, just because my being here is being very far away from home. And for Chim Kid, when he leaves the place that he was living in Argentina, he somehow feels closer to home.
Yeah.
And do you think that, you know, novelty or, like, experiencing something new can bring somebody closer to home, and in what way?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think novelty can be, I don't know if it was home, but it like broke me out of feeling so not at home. It broke me out of the headspace I had been in. Right. And it also was a desert, and I'm from California, and so part, like, I don't live in the desert, but a lot of my family lives in Northern California.
It's familiar.
That is kind of arid, and so it reminded me of this place that I consider so familial.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was a big part of it.
So you were looking for like the place you were living in, your apartment, just like you in the piece, Chim Kid's apartment is like barren and with gray walls.
Gray box without decoration.
Yeah, that was it. That'll do it. And yeah, you're just like, that was so anti-home for you. That was like the physical embodiment of being away from home, that you needed like a neutral space.
Yeah.
To feel at home.
I needed that. Well,
right.
A part of the whole piece is honestly that I left, and when I came back, I realized I had thought I had a whole reason for going. I think I had thought that that exactly what you said was my reason for going. And the problem was that when I came back, I realized I got nothing from leaving other than like seeing a beautiful place, which I feel fortunate for. But like, and especially in writing it, I realized there's really no way I could justify or understand why I felt the way I did and why I did the things I did. It was just kind of an impulse.
Right. Okay, so this is a two-part question. Do you write to kind of understand yourself better? And do you think, like, writing in general, like, do you think this is what writing in general is and should be? It's, like, a way to, like, understand and rediscover and, like, mirror yourself.
Okay, you ask me, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, something I've been thinking about a lot, because writing has been, like, seriously pissing me off, and I've been trying to think about why even do it. I think the purpose of writing is to understand yourself. That's the only way I can justify putting myself through it. That's at least the personal purpose. Whether you really get anything from it, I don't know. That was part of this for me, was like, this was genuinely an experiment for me, and I was trying to break away from the words I normally use and the ways I normally tell stories, because I feel like language is what was constricting me in a way when people were asking about my experience and why I had gone. And I wanted to fictionalize it and make it such a nonsense story.
Right, yeah.
That somehow represented my story more honestly than the genuine one does.
Yeah. And I feel like it's so hard to convey your experiences, just because people ask it sort of like casually. And if you had like a very like raw emotional experience while being away, you can't just like get into everything, and you're just like, it was fine, you know, I had fun, I took some pictures, my camera broke on the second day I was there, like just stuff like this. And I think it's just sort of like cleansing in a way, and it helps you process stuff.
Writing also, just I hate travel literature, and so I was like, I'm not doing that. That is not how I'm going about this.
Well, what do you not like about travel literature? I'm not saying I'm a big fan. I don't think I've read much, but I think it's interesting that you're against this genre.
That's fair. I think maybe it's not travel literature itself that I'm against, because like, of course, like Jack Kerouac is like from San Francisco, and his writing was an influence on me.
San Francisco is home to you.
Me. Yeah. He's from North Beach, and I love it over there. But I don't know, I think it was more the idea of, like, when people give you a little story about the time that they traveled, it's like, it can get on your nerves, and I think maybe it was just a personal fear that I was worried that if I wrote about that, that's what it would become. It would become, you're at a party and someone's trying to tell you about the time you went to Barcelona.
Barcelona. That was my summer. and I feel like there might be this tendency to, like, make things exotic, you know, just because, and I kind of hate that, you know, I would hate that, just you going to some place and be like, oh, it was so cool, and I saw so many different things, you know how people live it, like, that's, you know.
Yeah, like, it was like, so different from my life, wow, like, that's.
Yeah, and you gotta hear about it, everybody gotta hear about, you know.
I did not want to be that.
Yeah, and it's not that. I feel like it's very far from that. And you could just pass as a standalone story, because you got all these little allegories and all these, like, absurd lines, which actually, yeah, it's very, I think it's very absurd, which I love about it. I'm, like, a big, 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 big fan
of absurd stuff. I know this. I know. Yeah.
What motivated this choice? Like, make it absurd. Like, were you inspired by any writing, by any author, or are you just like this in general? Is it just?
Oh, I'm just like this. I'm just absurd AF.
Wait, I'm so random.
I'm so random. No, yeah, I don't know. You know, Samuel Beckett was a little bit of an influence.
Yep.
Irish blood runs thick in my veins. I don't know. I think there were a lot of writers that ended up influencing me. More than writers, it was like what made this piece happen and what made it so absurd is that Agnes Collard wrote a piece in The New Yorker about her thoughts on travel, where she was like, travel doesn't give you anything. And it's a piece that has a lot in it to be critiqued, because it's like, yeah, of course you can say this. You've gone everywhere, you old witch. But I was like, I was incredibly just like I had a lot of feelings about it, and I wasn't sure how to approach the, like thinking about it. Right. And my response was like, I'm just going to throw every word, every image I have about this travel, and so that I can kind of understand it a little bit
better. Yeah.
Yeah. And get away from the framework that I felt like she'd put me in.
I understand. Wait, I feel like it's pretty funny because sort of like the moral of your story is that your travel did not change anything about the way you were feeling.
Yeah.
Which is sort of... It's kind what of ironic. She said. Yeah,
It was horrific, because that was my problem, was that when I came back, I thought that this was the anecdote that was going to, like, prove... I should say, in the story, in real life, but in the story, I do kind of lose myself in the desert, which is what happened, vaguely. And I had just been so, like everything kind of held together... And I drove really far instead of doing any of the things I want to do. I just drove down one road.
What do you mean you drove? Did you like
we rented a car. I went and I drove far in one direction that I knew was pretty. And finally, I was like, okay, I should stop. The sun is setting, and I stopped and I walked up a little mountain. And I know now I'm doing travel, but I know, and it's horrible because now it's like, oh. Well, great for him. Good job. So cool.
Fucking mountain.
Yeah, literally just fucking mountain. But I got to the top, and the sun set right then, and it was, like, for some reason, crushing to me. It was so much to just find this one moment. And when I came back, I thought that I was going to be a different person because of how much the silence, because it was silent other than the kids I could hear arguing and the stupid dog. And just seeing this whole beautiful place in front of me. And when I came back, I kept trying to write things in response to her. And then I came upon
to call her, like, sending her aggressive.
Yeah, yeah, basically. I was reading everyone else's, like, horrible, like, insults of her, too. And finally I was like, I wasn't. I don't know if I was changed, but I also don't know if I wasn't changed. I kind of just don't know anything about the experience.
Yeah. Wait, that's so real.
That's so real.
But also, I feel like in the piece, there is a separation between you and Chimp Kid, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's
I should also say Chimp Kid is not supposed to be me. Chimp Kid was the first draft of this story started with, I have two kids at home.
Oh my god, yes, and I remember that. I read this draft.
I have two kids at home, so I have to tell this story quick. And the first draft of that first draft was, I have two kids at home, and one of them's a chimp. So I have to get back quick.
How did that happen?
This was just, I was living with two roommates, and I thought that they were both a little bit, not childish. I actually like both of them. That's what sucks, is I had good relationships with both of them. It was just, like, the idea that I was living with two people. I was like, what if they're kids, and one of them's a monkey?
Yeah.
And also, they didn't wash their dishes, so that wasn't great. But, love them.
Yeah, I love spite. I think this is one of the founding principles of everything.
Yeah. But I'm happy here. Did you interpret me to be Chimp Kid?
Wait, no, I know. Like,
I actually prefer that reading.
Wait, like, I interpreted the protagonist to be Chimp Kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, this is how it comes across. Yeah. And, okay, so you talked about the name, so Chimp... Okay, that is kind of funny.
Yeah.
Just a tiny bit. Yeah, and where is home for Chimp Kid? Because I know home for you is San Fran. But where's home for Chimp Kid? Have you thought about it?
Yeah, I have. Home for Chimp Kid is, like, the vague images I have of California. Home for Chimp Kid is literally the fog that I remember rolling in off of, like, the reservoir that's by the highway that I used to think was super scary. Like, that's what home is, the Chimp Kid. I don't think it's a real place.
all of the things that are lost.
Yeah.
That's in the piece. I'd not make that shit up. I would never come up with something so stupid.
You would.
Wait, and is this how Chimp Kid's home sounds like? Is this Chimp Kid's mom talking to him?
Yeah. This is...
Clean your room! Do your homework!
This is exactly what it is.
Wait, you're comp lit. This should be your translation thesis.
Yes, this is.
That's enough.
It's so interesting.
That's enough.
Like, we should keep that going in the background of every NAS podcast going forward.
Yeah, this is the...
Unrelated, just this is the
theme song. Yeah. It's, you know, it's a tribute to our, like, primate ancestors.
Yes, we're all chimp kids deep down.
That's so true.
Oh my god.
The Catholic Church would hate this.
For a lot of reasons.
Yeah, okay, so you did touch up a little bit on, like, what the sun means, like the light bulb.
Yeah.
But it did feel like it did read as way more complex than that. To me, at least, because it's, like, it's this feeling of heat, you know, like, suffocation. And he has, like, this whole, like, journey with the sun, where at first, like, to me, it read, like, it was the thing he was running away from,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
But then, after he meets, like, the sand woman.
Yeah.
And he, like, it was in the paragraph you read for us, which, thank you for that. He, like, the sun collapses onto him. Which now I know it's at sunrise, but it's, like, this image, like, collapsing, you know?
Yeah.
And it being swallowed whole. And then he comes back, he sees the sun again, and he, like, sort of still hates it, but then he falls asleep thinking of the collapse of the sun.
Yeah.
So it's, like he has this whole arc about it. I just rambled for a little bit.
No,
But do you have...
This is a good question.
Like, yeah, talk a little bit about the sun, because, like, it is sort of, like, the second main character in this piece.
Oh. I love how you're reading it.
Did my homework.
No, I mean, I love how you interpret it. But, yeah, I don't know. The sun probably lost its initial meaning, right? Got lost in the sauce. It was, of course, at first, the light above my bed that broke. That's what the sun teetering close by was. It was a lot of things to me, I think. It was the fact that my room didn't get much natural sunlight. It was the fact that I was in my normal summer, but I was in the southern hemisphere. And so it was winter and it was a little bit rainy. And when I went to the desert, it was kind of the closest to heat that I got. Mm. And it was a weird experience between heat and cold.
Do you associate heat with home?
No. The exact opposite, actually.
Oh, yeah. Like, San Francisco is really rainy.
Yeah. It's
sorry, don't know American geography.
No. Maybe I do associate it a little bit with home with some parts.
Mm.
I think that's the problem, is I have so many things to say about the sun. And that was part of the editing process, was I realized, like, oh, God, maybe I don't even know what most of these images mean. Maybe I just, like, thought of them. And then...
That's great. One more thing. Actually, two more things.
Oh, my God, on my list. You lied.
I think there's a couple more things.
So okay, yeah.
Bear with me. Why is Saturday Friday number 2 in your piece? It's a Katy Perry reference.
Is that like...
No. I was thinking about, like, TGIF. Sorry.
No, I wish. That's so much cooler.
Sorry, you're not that smart.
I think it's that I was sleep deprived and I was like, Friday number 2 when I wrote it. I don't want that to be the reason. I would prefer it to be a Katy Perry reference, but no.
Wait, no, I can work that in.
So. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to do an AI voice of you, like, saying, like, this is Katy Perry.
Yeah.
No, don't have time for that. You just have to stick with your
answer. Oh, I should have made that. People should lie more often. This is the end.
This was the moral of your travel. This is what you get out of
this
travel.
This is what I learned. I should lie more often.
Yeah, I think it's way easier to lie about your travels than it is to lie about something else.
That's true, because who else knows? Who else was there? Who else was there?
What are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to talk about the paragraph that you read at the beginning, which, thank you for that. I think I loved hearing it because it's my favorite part of your piece. And it really reminded me of Ariel by Sylvia Plath, just because of the stasis thing. Mm-hmm. I like the opening is iconic for that poem, like stasis and darkness, or stasis, or however you pronounce it. And I think it's just like the sort of like opposite arc almost to your character, because in Ariel, she's sort of like everything else around her decomposes and is just her, you know?
Yeah.
By the end, she's like an arrow. And in your piece, it's kind of the opposite, because like it's light, you know? Like this, it's not, the sun is not rising, the sun is going down.
Yeah.
And you're sort of getting dissolved into your surroundings. Like you're getting eaten up by the sand.
Yeah.
And I was like, was this intentional? Or like, is Sylvia Plath an inspiration for your writing?
I think she's always an inspiration. Icon. And R.I.P., of course. I have to say it. I can say it.
He's a feminist.
But yeah, no, she's definitely in that. And that the way she, maybe not specifically to this piece, but she's been influential for me in how she uses language to kind of break apart what she means to say. Like, for me, like, I love that I kind of can't understand what's happening most of the time. And that it's just these images that contradict. Yeah. And that's definitely something I have taken with me. Hopefully, that I at least try to emulate sometimes.
Okay.
I don't know. I know you're a Sylvia. We both love Sylvia.
Yeah, I'll admit that. Right. You told me that this paragraph was the last that you wrote in the editing process. And I know you're a junior editor on the NAS.
Yeah.
But you got your piece edited. So I kind of want you to talk a little bit about, like, what editing looks like on the NAS. Because I think people should know.
That's fair. I should also say real quick that my editor was Sophia. And
shout out Sophia.
And she is, like, an incredible editor. I think one of the virtues of working in an amazing place like this. And I say working in, like, I have a job. Like, in, like...
Yeah,
in,
you're contractually obligated
to be here. Yeah, I'm required. Yeah. But it's, like, getting amazing people and that feedback from amazing people. Yeah, it's, like, it's... Fine, I'll say it like this. It's fun. It's, like, really fun. And I like reading the people's stuff because I think people put in cool, dope things.
This might be it.
Is this it?
And, okay, just to
wait, can I real quick say, because this has been an underlying thought my entire time, thank you for having me on and for talking with me. I don't know. It's nice because it's weird because I'm just, like, a narcissist for 15 minutes, which is... weird, like I just talk about
myself. No, don't say that. You're a narcissist for all the minutes.
Oh, thank you. Oh my god, what a sweetie. But like, it's also just fun to get to talk with you, so I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to
the next episodes. Only time we talk. Well, this was it. This was the NAS podcast, the very, very, very first episode. I hope we can keep doing this. I can keep talking to writers and bringing you guys, you know, what stands at the center of these pieces, and we can like take a closer look at them together. And with this, I'm gonna let you listen to Frankie's favorite verbatim.
Everyone's favorite part of the NAS. Overheard in upperclassmen housing. Disgruntled resident. I'm just gonna smack the radiator until a roach falls out. Real.